Welcome to the Deep Dive. You know how we do things here. We grab a pile of fascinating information, and we give you the shortcut to really understanding what's going on. Today, we're looking at a huge financial story. But it's less about predicting markets and, well, much more about systemic stress.
Exactly. We're talking about gold. And specifically, that moment back in October 2025, when gold just smashed through all expectations, trading above $4,000 an ounce. First time ever. But look, our mission today isn't about investment tips. No, it's about digging into what that historic price really tells us.
That's the crux of it, isn't it? $4,000. It's way more than just a number on a screen. It makes it look deeper. Gold's always been a safe haven, sure, for centuries. But hitting this kind of level, it signals something else. It's like a flashing red light for, you know, fundamental risks in the whole global economy.
And what's really striking is the timing. You've got global stocks, bonds, major currencies, all looking pretty volatile, right? And then, boom, gold surges to $4,000. It actually makes gold one of the top performing assets in 2025. That difference, that gap, it tells you capital is scrambling out of paper assets and into something, well, tangible.
Okay, so let's start peeling this back. We've seen gold go up before, obviously, but this, this feels different somehow.
Yeah.
What are the deep structural things powering this?
Yeah.
Going way beyond just like short-term trading.
Yeah, it really boils down to two massive forces and they're locked together. First, you've got economic certainty just evaporating under this mountain of debt. And second, geopolitical tensions are ratcheting up, which pushes risk premiums higher across the board.
Let's tackle the debt first. The numbers we looked at, frankly, they're kind of terrifying. Total global debt is now over 256% of world GDP. I mean, just think about that number.
Mm-hmm.
256%.
It is. It's truly staggering. And it raises these huge questions about, you know, long-term sustainability. How long can this go on? When debt's that high, the whole system becomes brittle. It loses its flexibility. So any little shock, maybe a recession hits, maybe a supply chain snaps, it can cascade into a global credit crisis almost overnight.
Yeah.
And people, they run to gold. Because it's the one asset that isn't someone else's IOU, someone else's liability.
Right. But hang on. If central banks are hiking interest rates to fight inflation, which they have been, doesn't that theoretically at least boost confidence in their currency over the long run? Isn't monetary policy supposed to stop fiat money becoming worthless?
Ah, well, that's the bind they're in. That's the real tension we're seeing play out. Yes, they hike rates. But those higher rates mean governments have to spend vastly more just paying the interest on the debt they already have. It creates this this nasty feedback loop. Higher rates are meant to stop inflation, but they also blow up the debt servicing costs, which then creates political pressure to maybe cut rates again or, you know, print more money, which ultimately undermines the very confidence they were trying to build in the first place.
And then you layer on top the political instability, right? Like the constant threat of government shutdowns we saw in the U.S. or just general uncertainty about fiscal policy, it creates this unpredictability. And capital hates unpredictability. The second governments or institutions start looking shaky, poof, money flows out of their debt and straight into things like gold.
Precisely. And that flow gets amplified by all the geopolitical stress points. Think about the ongoing trade disputes, the U.S. tariffs, the counter tariffs. That cycle creates massive uncertainty for global trade. Businesses just can't plan effectively, so they hedge.
And we're also seeing actual physical conflicts adding to the risk premium. The war in Ukraine, sadly, continues. Unrest across the Middle East. It means every supply chain, every energy source, every major trade route feels, well, riskier. There's an elevated threat level.
And it's not just external conflicts either. Look at the internal political instability. Even in big, traditionally stable places like France or Japan, governments there are facing serious internal challenges, protests. All of this feeds into investors preferring assets that are seen as truly non-sovereign, stable, outside the political fray.
Which brings us, I think, very neatly to the core of the story here. Okay, so geopolitical chaos, macroeconomic uncertainty. Capital usually flees weak assets for the strong ones. But what happens when the strongest asset, the U.S. dollar, the world's reserve currency, starts to look, well, shaky itself?
This is where it gets really interesting. This is the fundamental shift in confidence we're talking about. In fiat currencies, yes, but specifically the U.S. dollar. For decades, the dollar was king. Untouchable, almost. But the data we reviewed showed something pretty shocking. The U.S. dollar lost around 10% of its value just in the first half of 2025.
Wow. 10% in 6 months. That's the worst performance for the dollar in 50 years, half a century. We're not just talking about a bit of inflation slowly grinding away value. This is a huge historical drop in purchasing power. What on earth fueled that kind of rapid decline?
It's a confluence of factors hitting all at once. You've got these persistent large fiscal deficits in the U.S., just the sheer amount of debt being created. Combine that with the market waking up to the fact that U.S. economic growth is actually slowing down. So high spending, slow growth, plus that constant policy uncertainty we mentioned. It creates this deep sense of vulnerability around the world's main reserve currency.
And naturally, when the dollar takes a hit like that, the rest of the global financial system pays attention. Big time. We saw reports showing central banks around the world reacting pretty decisively. They're buying gold, increasing their reserves at a rate we haven't seen before. Why? To diversify away from relying so heavily on the U.S. dollar, to hedge that currency risk.
Exactly. Countries like Poland, several key economies in Asia, they're making major gold purchases publicly. And this isn't just, you know, tactical hedging. It feels more strategic. It's part of this broader move towards, let's call it de-dollarization, building up a more balanced reserve portfolio to protect their own economies from, well, from the volatility of U.S. policy, both monetary and fiscal.
Okay, that really sets the stage for this next piece, which feels like a major structural change. It's not just governments buying gold anymore. Institutional banks, the big players, are now essentially mandated to view gold differently.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Basel III. It sounds technical, but it seems like a quiet yet profound driver behind this $4,000 price.
Yes, this is absolutely a critical pivot, an institutional one. Basel III, it's the big regulatory framework that came out of the ashes of the 2008 financial crisis, and it dictates how banks have to classify the assets they hold on their books. Before these changes fully phased in, gold was treated, well, somewhat ambiguously in regulatory terms. Now, the framework fundamentally changes how physical gold is treated on a bank's balance sheet.
Okay, walk us through that. Why does this matter so much to a huge bank holding billions in reserves? What exactly did Basel III change that suddenly makes physical gold look so much better than, say, paper promises related to gold?
Right. It recognized allocated physical gold as a Tier 1 asset, specifically classifying it as a high-quality liquid asset, or HQLA. That designation, it's a game changer. For regulators, HQLA is the absolute top tier of collateral. It's treated almost like cash or the very safest government bonds. And allocated gold got this status primarily because it lacks counterparty risk.
Let's just pause there and make that distinction crystal clear for everyone listening because it's really fundamental. When we say allocated gold, what we mean is physical gold bars or coins, specifically set aside, identifiable, and owned outright by that bank or investor.
Correct.
That's exactly right. It's their property, sitting in a specific vault, registered under their name. It's tangible. Unallocated gold, on the other hand, is an ownership of specific bars. It's basically just a claim against a dealer's general pool of gold holdings, like an IOU from the dealer. Now, if that dealer, that counterparty, gets into trouble and fails, like we saw with institutions during the 2008 crisis, well, your claim, your unallocated gold position, could become worthless. So by recognizing that allocated gold doesn't have this counterparty risk, Basel III essentially declared it inherently safer from a regulatory standpoint. So almost overnight, the global banking regulators effectively said, look, we trust an actual physical bar of gold sitting in your vault more than we trust your claim against another bank's pool of gold.
Mm-hmm.
Why make that definitive switch now? I mean, Basel III rules have been discussed and developed for years, right?
It's really a reflection, I think, of a deeper regulatory reaction. First, to the systemic failures revealed back in 2008, but also it's underscored by the sheer scale of global debt we discussed earlier. Regulators desperately want banks to hold assets that can genuinely be turned into cash in a crisis without depending on another institution staying solvent. Gold, now recognized as HQLA, does that. And as a bonus for the banks, holding more HQLA, like physical gold, improves their capital adequacy ratios. It means they might need to hold less other riskier forms of capital against their liabilities. It makes their balance sheet look stronger.
And that regulatory seal of approval, that HQLA status, it's completely changing gold function, isn't it? It's moving it away from being just this static, inert thing sitting in a vault to becoming a functional working asset in the day-to-day machinery of high finance. You mentioned it can now be used as collateral, like in repo markets.
Precisely. That's a huge development. Let's put it simply. Imagine a large bank needs cash quickly, maybe just overnight, short-term liquidity. Before, their main options were to sell some assets, maybe quickly, maybe at a bad price, or use things like top-tier government bonds as collateral in a repurchase agreement or repo transaction. Now, under Basel III, they can use their allocated gold reserves just as easily for that same purpose. as collateral in repo deals or potentially in swap arrangements too. This means they can raise the cash they need without having to sell their physical gold. It makes their existing gold reserves far more useful, far more liquid and functional on a daily basis.
Wow. Okay, so that makes gold a productive asset again in a way it hasn't been for maybe decades. That alone must be driving significant institutional demand, almost irrespective of day-to-day price moves or inflation fears.
Absolutely. And that internal shift within the Western banking system is mirrored by developments happening elsewhere, particularly the rise of alternative financial centers, especially in Asia. We've seen really significant investment in financial infrastructure there. Take the Shanghai Gold Exchange, its futures market. It's now offering global settlement options. It's actively trying to position itself as an independent, you know, sovereign infrastructure for pricing and trading physical metal away from the traditional centers like London or New York.
So this move towards Asian-based physical settlement infrastructure, it reinforces that de-dollarization trend we talked about. And it's also a move away from the dominance of the traditional London-based paper gold market,
which
has often been criticized for, well, a lack of transparency. It sounds like evidence of a bigger rewiring of global finance.
It feels like a seismic shift, yes.
So let's bring this all together. What does this mean for you, the listener, trying to make sense of this? When we see this $4,000 price flashing on the screen, is this just another speculative bubble? You know, something temporary that'll pop when geopolitical risks eventually cool down? Or are we really watching something deeper, something more permanent unfold?
I think we really need to view the gold price less as a speculative bet and more like an economic thermometer. It's signaling these deeper structural risks building up in the system, this repricing of gold, reaching $4,000. It reflects a collective institutional rethinking of what actually constitutes a truly risk-free asset, especially in a world that is just swimming, drowning in sovereign debt.
Yeah, when global debt is over 250% of GDP and the world's reserve currency loses 10% of its value in just 6 months, well, big money, institutional investors, they don't really have a choice, do they? They have to react. The reports we analyze certainly suggest a major portfolio shift is underway. They're dialing back exposure to government bonds, other paper assets, and actively increasing their allocation to physical gold.
And the key drivers behind this, the currency devaluation concerns, the persistent geopolitical instability, and that regulatory framework, Basel III, which basically institutionalizes the preference for physical assets. All of this suggests that the trend towards gold regaining its role as a kind of monetary anchor, well, it looks pretty enduring. Of course, there will be short-term price swings. Volatility is normal. But the underlying structural changes, I think they're here to stay.
Okay, so let's quickly recap the main takeaways from this deep dive. That $4,000 gold price isn't just one thing. It seems to be a symptom of really three powerful forces all converging and feeding off each other. First, eroding confidence in fiat currencies, especially the dollar. Second, unusually high and persistent geopolitical stress. And third, this regulatory push from Basel III, making physical gold a core functional asset for the entire banking system.
Right. And this historic price point, it really underscores the need for education over just pure speculation. It forces us all to ask some pretty fundamental questions. Questions about the very nature of money and about the sustainability of our modern debt-based financial system.
Exactly. When trust in government-issued money and government debt starts to falter on a global scale, what then becomes the ultimate trustworthy store of value? What is it? This $4,000 marker really invites you to watch closely. Observe how central banks navigate this. What do they prioritize going forward? Will they focus on defending their currency's stability at all costs, or will they continue to find ways to accommodate ever-growing debt levels? The answer to that question will likely tell us a lot about where the gold price heads next.